Roll to Save presents The Assumptions, a Slay Industries actual play podcast. Hello and welcome to The Assumptions, a new actual play mini-series hosted by Roll to Save. Steve's had this idea that we should do the odd actual play of the games we're talking about so the listeners can get a feel for them, so here we are. If you've never played or read Slay Industries before, well, what are you waiting for? Go and download our history episode and give it a listen, that'll give you all the background you need. Slay is set in a dystopian universe known as the World of Progress, where everything and everyone is owned by the omnipresent megacorporation Slay Industries. The players take on the role of operatives, employees of Slay Industries that are expected to take on all manner of jobs the company needs doing, and risking life and limb in the process. This podcast will follow three such fledgling operatives: Bovril, the advanced Carrion, Bob, the human, and, confusingly, Bob McTavish, the frother. We'll look at them fresh out of the training academy at Menny as they endeavour to make a name for themselves in the World of Progress. The challenges facing these new employees will be many and varied, but for now, we join them as they take a train ride to the big, big city and their first day as operatives.
Last night was your last night in Menny. Some of you spent the night in quiet contemplation of how far you've come and an anticipation of what the future holds. Some of you partied hard into the night, you got high, you got into a fight, or you got lucky, or any and all combinations in between. Whatever you got up to, whether you're nursing the mother of all hangovers, aching from bruises, and fondly remembering smashing some jerk's nose, or buzzing with nervous energy, you find yourself on the platform waiting for the next Gauss train to North Central. 4 years you've been away from the city, but now you have your training package certificate. But strangely, no squad allocation. Something about being selected for some new program. I guess that makes you special. After a small wait, Gauss train pulls up. It's a bit manky. There's graffiti on it. The adverts are new, and the glue's still wet on some of them. The adverts are a mix of the direct and the odd. Fen and BLA are well represented, along with some weird hostels for ops that don't like their new digs. There's even one for an APC cot and a bag for operatives that want to live in their van. Weird, I know. In every car, at every door, stands a dart finder in black crackshot 10 armor. Totally motionless, totally impassive, totally intimidating. You future operatives board the train, and there's a few people start messing around, and there's a few hijinks start ensuing, but a couple of quick looks from a dart finder and things tend to calm. The train pulls out. The bright lit, dry, many, the dome gives way, and you hit more itself. You're suspended on a Gauss train, probably some 30 meters above the ocean. The waves are raging around, there's a storm out there, the rain is lashing at the glass, the sky. It's just the colour of a television turned to a dead channel. It takes you probably about an hour of this featureless ocean till you start seeing the land appear. And that's actually no better than the ocean. It's grey, it's featureless, it's dead. And it rains consistently all the way until eventually Mort City comes into view, overbearing and oppressive, stretching up in a vaguely conical shape reminiscent of the biggest volcano you could ever imagine, but constructed from building upon building upon building as far as the eye can see. With Mort Central and Slay Industries head office acting as its peak, and much of Mort City's structure below the surface of the planet. The vast majority of the city-state citizens live well below the basal line. They're deprived of natural rain and rained upon constantly by the effluence of those above them. And then there's the wall, 30 meters high, 20 meters thick, and constantly patrolled by green armed figures, shivers. The train passes over the sector wall and into the city. The crust emerges beneath you, the most desirable and affluent reaches of inner downtown. The crust is an uneven plateau of high-rise apartments and factory rooftops which circle the perimeter wall that fences up suburbia and downtown Berlin. Graffiti adorns every surface, advertising hoardings are everywhere. Calf weaponry, piggy-wiggy meat products, coffin cigarettes, and flying jelly attack confectionery compete the space with Dr. Craddock's recycled gum, jockwear clothing, and something's up sex aids. As the train slows and glides over the perimeter wall, heavily armed and wearing black Cratchit armour, you can see the Dark Finders patrolling this wall. And everyone coming in is security checked under their ever watchful eyes. But now you pass over suburbia. Look at the area, somewhat drab and oppressive architecture. Here's where slave racks countless employees and their families into ugly concrete slabs, and most never leave them except to attend a labour-intensive job or to get inebriated. The advertising improves, though, pushing more aspirational brands like Sigerson Street Clothing, Ardici Hypnowear and Booba Health, as well as those aimed specifically for operatives, the latest weaponry from Fenn and Blay, ultra-violence and rush combat drones, Glyphware and Karma, Animatron and Velcro. And then there's Uptown. This is regarded as high-end retail, residential district. Only the most affluent and high-end scalpers can afford to live here. Everything you could possibly want is here. You look down on high jewel sports cars and Kalahari motorcycles, adverts for life after death, all of the higher end, beautiful people everywhere. And you pull into Central, where the enormous Slayhead office building dominates the skyline and no other building comes close in terms of size, scale or activity. But as you pull into Central and disembark from the train, you see there's Dark Finders everywhere and you're being kind of routed towards head office. You can see some of the people you recognise from many. You know, everybody's come from there, but it's a big place, you know, everybody. You see a couple. Maybe there's that guy that you staved his nose in as he was getting a bit too friendly. Until eventually you walk in on the main floor, the main entrance of head office. You rush it over to one side. There's some of these silken kind of ropes that kind of cordon you off on one side. It all seems very quiet and subdued. And, you know, all the sound appears to be much lower level here, except for the footsteps of anybody who walks here, which echo like gunshots off the walls. And it's all very, very clean, a bit like many, a bit unlike everyone. Eventually, your names are called and your SCL cards are checked and you're shown to a lift and you go upstairs. And eventually you're all placed in individually in a room. There's a table, two chairs, not a lot else, a camera in the corner looking down on you. And after a small wait, a gentleman walks in with a big smile and a clipboard. He walks in and takes one look at Bovril and does a bit of a step back, but the smile temporarily subsides a little bit, but not much. And he extends a hand urgently and, "Hi, I'm Ron McDonald. I'm here to look after you guys and get you oriented and get your contract signed and then get you all off and ready. If you'd like to take a seat," pulls over an ashtray and lights himself a coffin cigarette, offers you all one. Don't know whether you take it or not, but if you do, he lights it with his Clip-O lighter and you look and one of those will be yours in just a few minutes. "Here's your contracts," and he kind of slaps this wad of paper. "I've highlighted with markers if you just like to sign here, 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 here. Initial there, you can initial there as well, and here, 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 and signature there. Thank you." And he sits back, takes a deep draw on his cigarette, and waits.
Bovril will pick up the pen and sign the various highlighted parts. Okay. Doesn't even question it.
Why would you? Bob?
Oh, let Bob go first.
Bob is nursing a massive hangover. The lights and the sounds are like, you can see him wincing as he's been following along in the crowd. You know, he might be wearing dark glasses, he might not be, but right now he's sort of squinting at this corporate drone, looking down at the paperwork, looking back into the drone. He just shakes his head, takes a puff of the cigarette, and then just starts scratching like terrible, terrible looking signature, like probably worse than Bovril's signature. You might doubt the guy could even write the way
Bovril's about it. Bovril's actually got really neat handwriting.
It definitely worse than Bovril did. Can we just get on with this?
It won't be long. Very soon, I'll get you. Once we've got this signed, then I'll introduce you to your squad mates, and we'll explain what's going on, and then we can go from there. And then you guys can pick up your equipment, and you can head off down to Slayer's crib and start looking for that BPN, looking for that fame and fortune. I'm sure will come your way. He smiles.
Hope just takes a swig from a hip flask he's got. Whether or not he's allowed to, he doesn't give a shit.
He doesn't get stopped, and Ronald doesn't appear to be in the mood to question it.
Bob's going to have a look through his paperwork just to make sure that the highlighted sections are the correct highlighted sections, to make sure he's not signing in the wrong place, he's not initialing in the wrong place. Not so much that he's checking the minutiae of what the clause is saying, but that he's putting the mark in the right place.
Seems everything seems to be in order. This, you know, we're not playing paranoia here. There are numerous points where it's highlighted and they've got those little coloured sticky markers on so that you can flip to the right page and all this kind of stuff. In all truth, when you signed up and ended up going to many, you pretty much signed this contract anyway. This is more a formality than anything else. It's not like it's anything new. It's a standard T's and C's. You know, Slay's very proud of its standard T's and C's. You just have to look at the three P's that gets offered to planets that aren't yet members of the World of Progress. So they're very proud of their paperwork. So yeah, all seems in order.
Sign my life away.
Okay, well, it's already signed away, don't you worry. And once you sign, he smiles, he has a look, says, yep, everything appears to be in order. Probably wondering why you guys haven't had a squad assigned, so if you'd like to come with me, I'll take you to meet your squad mates. Apparently, it's some new initiative from head office where they've kind of looked at your scores and many and kind of tried to match you up with some people that they think might perform better than if we just took a squad from many and just let them go. You must have impressed somebody to be part of this like prestigious new program. I'm sure it'll yield dividends. He takes you out, takes you into another room where you get your first glimpses of each other. So if I can introduce you, this is Bovril, this is Bob, and this is Bob, and you guys are going to be a squad. So first thing you're going to need to do, and he gets a wad of paper out and slaps it down on the table, you're going to need to fill in one of those for a squad registration form. I'll give you 10 minutes or so, but you really need to come up with a squad name and get to know your squad members. So I'll leave you to it. Good luck, gentlemen, and Bovril. And he leaves.
Bovril extends a hand. Hello, I am Bovril.
I think you guys have probably seen the pictures in the rule book of Advanced Carrion, but Ian, you might want to give a little bit.
So yeah, Bovril stands about 6'5". He's very heavily built. He is an advanced carrion, which says that he looks like a carrion. You guys will have seen carrion. They're vermin that live on Mott City in the cannibal sectors and make a nuisance of themselves by coming into downtown through the sewers. They're always on TV on things like Slaughterhouse 6, The Go Zone, and various other programs where operatives are seen carving them up. Advanced carrion are from a program that Slay's run, that Slay reckon that carrion are the ultimate survivors, therefore why don't we try and train some of them. Bovril is a product of that program, so as well as being of humanoid build but being rather big, his face is like that of a fleshless canine. Interestingly, there's some musculature and structure underneath it, otherwise it wouldn't be able to move, but his outer face is take a dog and move all the flesh of it. It looks like that. His eyes are like single blue points of light in his sockets. They don't have pupils or irises or anything like that. They're just blue. He's always smiling, obviously.
He has no lips.
Hello. I'm Bob.
I'm pleased to meet you, Bob.
Have a look at Bob.
Well, why don't we cut the crap? You can call me McTavish if you have to. Less confusion in combat. I don't want anyone thinking, go attack Bob, when really they should be coming to me, or I should be doing that, right? Let's just cut through that. Let's face it, you're not going to be doing much of the combat yourself anyway, are you? You're probably going to be standing back with a clipboard, I would imagine.
That is the kind of thing I was trained to do.
I thought so. And you, Big Yin, yeah, I'll definitely be seeing you up on the front line, eh?
I am certainly trained in all forms of combat. Slay has taken me and conditioned me and ensured that I am optimized for those parameters.
We'll see about that.
I like your dark glasses. I have good glasses too, but I need them for correction to my vision. Why are you wearing dark glasses inside?
He'll take them off again. He's got like a huge shiner on one of the eyes, and he's just squinting up at this massive, the massive Bovril. It's bright. I mean, don't you see that? Like, it's awfully bright. I don't know about you, but I had a hell of a bender last night. Coming here to the big city after all that training and crap, I had to kick off some steam. I'm sure you did the same, right, Big Man?
I had my requisite 8 hours of rest.
Oh, of course you did. Of course you did.
I was informed that we would be having an early start, therefore that was the prudent thing to do.
Prudent, sure. And I'm sure, Bob, you had your requisite 8 hours sleep as well, didn't you?
Or a fraction thereof.
Aye. I can believe that.
However, I am very happy to be here. This is the beginning of a new chapter in all of our lives. I have a chance to make something better of myself and of Slay. Slay has invested a lot of time and money in my education, and I endeavour to make the most of it. I am very happy.
Happy's good. So anyone got any ideas for a squad name? Triple B, throwing it out there.
Why Triple B?
Bovril, Bob, Bob, even though we're calling him McTavish.
That would be confusing then to be called Triple B.
How about BBM?
If it was two Bs and an M. McTavish, what are you trained in?
I am trained in killing scunners as quickly as possible, usually with sharp items and chopping their heads off. Does that answer your suitable question there, Bob?
It does. What about Bob?
I mainly handle the paperwork, you know, that all that awful stuff that no one really likes to do after the fun stuff at the front line.
What's a scunner?
It's what you're going to be if you ask too many more questions, big man.
I don't understand the antagonism.
Give it a couple hours, you will.
BBM then?
You deal with the paperwork. Unless we're going to call it McTavish and the rest, which is, that would be my vote personally, but I guess there's three of us, so I vote two hands, McTavish and the rest. You guys can vote as you like.
And what's the purpose of this?
I suppose they've got to call us something as a group.
But will this be on television?
I have no idea.
It better be. And I better be right in front of it. You lot can stand at the back. I will be the one right there, claymore in hand, while you lot can just be like... It'll be like those pictures you've seen in ads whereby you've got the big presence of the profile, the main character, and the other two like standing way back in the background. They're still in the main cast, but let's face it, who's going to be the big man in front? It's going to be this guy right here.
That doesn't sound right though, because you keep referring to me as big man.
He's got a point.
Well, let's face it, you're tall, which is useful, but, you know, easier to get killed because you're like, you're not be able to, you know, hide behind anything while I'm running in front, right? They're going to see you and shoot you in the head.
So you're trained in hiding?
No, I'm trained in running up in front. You'll be trained in probably hiding, but you can't hide very well as a big man, can you?
I've not been trained in hiding.
Well, let's face it, you know.
It sounds like you're making assumptions. How about the assumptions?
That sounds like a good one.
Doesn't have as much of a ring to it as McTavish and the others, but...
Matt, it looks like he's deferring to you to sign something.
I'll go with the assumptions. So if there's anywhere to write that down and present it, that's what I'll put forward as the suggested name.
You're awfully clever for one of your kind there, Balrol.
There's another one of those assumptions.
Hey.
Well, it's more of a fact than an assumption, but sure, we'll go with it.
How many carrion have you met?
I mean, meat is a relative term, right? How many have I killed? Probably, you know, more than a few, but...
Really? Do you know how they hunt?
Do you know how I hunt?
Answering a question with a question is not an answer.
Oh, I'm bored with this. Take another swig. Fill out the paperwork. Let's get on with whatever crap mission they're going to give us so we can get to the good stuff.
So you Bob will defer to Bob.
Yeah, so sign away. And I'm thinking... Bovril, 8 inches. Bob, 6 inches. Dick waving contest complete. We have a name.
Okay. And just on time, because a couple of minutes time, the gentleman walked back in. Says, okay, so how are you getting on? Everything good here? Yeah? You guys getting on well? Good to see. So you guys probably should pick up your equipment. Here's your basics. And at that point, a couple of guys walk in carrying boxes. Each one's labeled with a name. And he puts it on the table. There's one for each of you. That's your Fen and Clippo, and you know, basically basic standard issue equipment. And then it's a case of there's a catalogue in there that you can order some items from, or alternatively, if you want to take a walk around the mall and have a look and see what takes your fancy down there. So it's a case of getting you certain guys equipped now. So any questions?
I think we're good.
Okay, let me know when you're done and show you out. He takes the form. The assumptions, right? There's obviously a story behind that, but I'm just trying to imagine that on like a Saturday night schedule or something.
New contracts in hand, our operatives now head off to the uptown malls to get the equipment they will need for their new lives. As part of this, one of the assumptions has tried to make a rather expensive purchase.
Somebody at SCL10 thinks he can buy a blitzer. He can, but it's not going to be easy. It's like walking in to a Ferrari showroom after you've just pulled out up outside in a Robin Reliant. You're going to get as much attention and they are going to look at you all kinds of funny, and it's going to make you feel a bit small until you produce the credits. And then, amazingly, attitudes tend to shift. Mm-hmm. So they do give it a bit of a squeeze because you're SCL 10 and you shouldn't be having this amount of money. And the only thing they do ask is when they, because they're custom made, so it's going to take a little time to get one to you. But if you'd like to come with us and have a chat with our media guy, and you are taken out the back and there's a guy there. It's very unusual for an operative fresh out of many to be buying one of our products. I'm sure what brought you here is our reputation. And as I'm sure you understand, our reputation is paramount. We need to ensure that every operative looks upon BLA as the supplier of choice for high-grade firearms in Mort and beyond in the world of Primaris. So we would like you to refrain from utilizing the weapon in situations which may bring our brand into question. So, for example, these are very powerful weapons, firing off shots indiscriminately at small targets would probably be a waste. I mean, it's a lot of money, the ammunition for these things. Conversely, you come across some thresher guy in a power suit, that's where you need to step up front and center. So we need you to be able to bring the gun to the fore in situations where it's appropriate. We also need to be able to send it back when it's not. Does this all make sense?
Oh, perfectly. I mean, that's the kind of thing I was thinking of anyway. It's for personal defence in the situation in which it's required. I mean, we're given weaponry anyway, but I want to have something as a nice backup that if it needs to have that clout, then I've got it. But otherwise, you don't use it in every situation. Definitely not.
Are you prepared for the level of attention such a product will draw?
I think it's nice to make a statement. It's a...
I think you will certainly be doing that with our products, sir. Yeah. Absolutely. Statements are what we specialise in, I think. Short, sharp statements.
Very to the point.
Large 12.7mm statements, generally. Okay, well, that's fine. So if I could just have your signature on this little disclaimer here. If you can let us know where you're staying, and we'll get that sent to you as soon as we can.
There you go again. Sign away after making sure that there's nothing hidden in there that he hasn't already disclosed.
It is a bit, if you bring BLA into disrepute, they're going to be really unhappy. I mean, what can they do, right? You go down the uptown mall and have a look, and it's fabulous. It's clean. There is plenty of space. There aren't a huge amount of people. A lot of fresh ops, and some of them seem to be quite in awe of this place. But in general, it's pretty well behaved and very clean. And there's some very, very aspirational products all around.
What Bovril will probably be doing is, because McTavish has told him that he is an expert in killing things up close and personal, Bovril will probably be going through the catalogue and highlighting the various hand-to-hand accoutrements and almost rhyming off what they are and then asking McTavish for his opinion on them, which I'm sure will probably grow very old after the third.
So, Mac knife. Bah, bah, bah.
Yeah. Like, this is a DBP gash fist. This goes on your hand. It has a blade that extends back into your arm, but when you clench it, the blade comes out. It's got a cutting length of yada, 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 yada. What do you think of this?
You're playing melee weapon top trumps with McTavish.
Well, no, he's more interested in his opinion on them.
Okay.
Because he knows what they are, because he's been through the training in the catalogue, but McTavish has set himself up as an expert on this, and therefore he's very interested in an expert's opinion. Except it might not come across as that; it might just come across as very annoying.
Yeah. So McTavish is already he's obviously already went straight to like the biggest two-handed weapon that he can find in the catalogue, which he's very familiar with those. And anytime Bovril asks a question, it's crap or BS or any other variant of an obscenity that he can talk about with anything but Claymore.
But yeah, crap, you get the impression rubbish, that everything's nonsense. A bit rubbish. And except a two-handed Claymore, particularly of Clan McTavish, I would guess, or wielded by a member of Clan McTavish. I mean, I don't know if you're going to attempt to throttle Bovril after about the third or fourth of these kind of questions, but I'm going to assume not.
He's almost ignoring him. He's way too focused on getting his weapon, and when he finally gets it, he's like, all that crap, those were just rubbish. I've already told you that, right? This is a weapon.
Bovril will actually probably have zoned out at that point, because he has seen in one of the cabinets the gash fist. Throughout his training, he has been looking for that thing that will allow him to keep both of his hands free for using his pistols, but at the same time give him the ability to inflict gratuitous violence. And while he's got his own claws, he obviously wants to remain armoured. So this thing is like a revelation for him, because it's like a large armoured gauntlet, but also with retractable blades on it. McTavish will probably be talking to him, and he'll just turn around and go over to get a salesperson straight away, because he's found his baby.
You go and find a salesperson who, there's this sort of young woman, business attire, just kind of looking at this at a desk, writing stuff down. As you go over, she looks up with a beaming smile and then just eyes wide open, and she kind of pushes herself back from the desk a little. You can see a bit of panic in her eyes, and then she kind of takes a deep breath and stands. How may I help you, sir?
Bovril smiles.
You can hear the stress and the crack in her voice, as she said. She's trying very hard to hold it together, but you are quite scary.
I would like to purchase the gash fist.
Of course, a fine choice. I mean, assuming we all love a man who comes in, an operative that comes in and knows exactly what they want. But have you had a chance to peruse the other? It's definitely the gash fist that you want, then.
I would like it in green, please.
In green? Of course, any particular shade of green? I mean, we can go from luminescent kind of krypton green all the way to kind of a darker olive through that shiver green.
Lime
green. Assuming not shiver green.
Lime green.
Lime green. I think, you know, that will catch the camera, I think, more so than you clearly already will. I'll be right back. And she skitters away on almost falls over, getting around the desk and disappears off, but eventually does come back with a massive box. She's not carrying it, she's got a guy carrying it, big box.
While she's in the back, Borval's basically going to be standing by the cabinet, and anyone who comes over, he's going to make a point explaining that he's bought this, and then go into things like it's cutting strength.
Nobody is coming anywhere near you.
Good Borval.
Okay, unless these guys are. You know, I mean, there are a lot of operatives around, so some of them are not that fazed by you. You know, there's a couple of malice stormers who just really do not pay you any attention at all. Mostly you're left to your own devices.
I have this image of McTavish outside the shop, like a kid in the 80s with nunchucks, just doing moves with his...
Yeah, I can see. Well, first of all, I can see him basically getting out of the packaging before it's out of the shop, because it will come in a box and it will be, you know, wrapped appropriately, and you know,
he's already cracked it out.
Okay.
As soon as he got it, he cracked it out and was like walked over to Barwell and say, "Look, check this out. Look, I know you're waiting for that, you know, nonsense thing you're going to strap to your arm there, but this is a weapon." And he's sort of like, you know, testing out like the heft of it and the balance and stuff like that, you know, the typical sort of like montage of, you know, testing out a new weapon. And then he's already looking at it like, yeah, this needs some, we need to mark this up a bit. What would be something he could buy that could customize it, either with carvings or engravings or anything like that? Basically, yeah. He's going to deface the shit out of it.
There's the obvious things. I mean, it comes out, and if you can imagine that probably all of these weapons are going to come out of boxes, I hope you kind of get what I'm thinking of here, but it's almost Apple-like in the kind of beauty of the packaging, right? Everything is just so. And there are pictures on the side, like schematics of the weapon in various, you know, to make it look kind of technical.
He's just dumped all that crap on the floor.
Exactly. So there's a small amount of that shit on the floor. But they come out and they are, you know, polished, like works of art almost, of an inch of its life. Everything is just so. However, that doesn't stop you. You can always customize. If you think about anything you can put on a mobile phone, you can put it on a weapon. So if you want a case, you know, you can change the color of the casing. If you want a grip, you can put a colored grip. You want a tassel on the bottom, a clan tartan, we can do that. If you want, we can get you admittedly a fake, but you know, a little model skull that you can like slide down the blade, and it'll nestle on the, you know, in between the cross piece and the blade. So, you know, for that barbarian kind of image, if that's what we want to portray.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, you don't want to put too much on the blade. That's probably not a good idea, but you can always color it. There's no reason you can't color the blade. Lights are an option, you know, especially down the kind of the channel in the middle of the blade. You know, that's possible to light that up.
He's already thinking about this. I'm thinking out loud of the things that he wanted to do.
Okay. And not, are these performance enhancing or just image enhancing?
Oh, image, completely image enhancing. Like, he's got to represent a clan with this weapon.
I've got an image that while McTavish is doing that, there's probably a montage of Bovril like going from shop to shop and having almost the same response as he's very politely inquiring after various items. And he'll probably take a weird obsession of things like laser painters, for example, that he'll want to go over it in detail with the poor shop assistant and talk about how to tune it, because he's read about all these things, he's knowledgeable about them.
And he's keen to show people.
And he's keen to show people this knowledge, and he's probably slightly obsessive about some of it. Not like the interesting detail of how do you align this properly to make it more accurate when shooting, but things like how many screws are on the laser painter and just how exactly you fit it onto the top of the weapon, and things like certain, like when he goes to buy a camera, he's interested in things like filters and playback rates and just the right noise it makes when you put the data slug into it. He'll probably be holding the camera up to his ear and just like
putting the slug in, taking it out.
Really that soft release noise he's really quite into.
Well, I mean, you're too big and scary for anybody to look bored. So nobody looks bored and nobody seems to mind how long he stays there. But believe me, they exit stage left pretty quick when he leaves. But it does mean that Bovril has a rather large stack of boxes, as I believe does Bob. Bob, less so, most of them are open, and there's a small mountain of packaging left in his wake. You do see one of the store owners kind of talking to one of the security guys, and the security guy's like just shaking his head, and the guy's pointing and gesticulating and really angry, and the guy's just like, nope. And then eventually you see goes over to the janitor guy, and the janitor guy gets it. Comes out and starts putting stuff into the bin.
So I see that Bovril's got a large trolley.
Yeah.
He's probably got filled up. He'll probably put his armor on when he buys his armor, because that seems like too big a piece to just stick into a trolley.
Yeah, you can get it all delivered if you wish. It's not a problem. But you know, there's some things you probably want to put your mitts on pretty quick.
He wants to put all these mitts on him because he basically grew up in a society that hoarded things, and if you didn't have it physically in front of you, someone else.
You're going to keep all the boxes, aren't you?
I'm going to keep all the boxes, and they're going to be ordered as well neatly in his apartment.
And eventually, your shopping spree will come to an end, and you, I guess. But what are you going
to
do?
I think they probably agree to meet up somewhere, presumably for a drink, and to discuss what they do next.
You've been listening to The Assumptions, our Slay Industries actual play podcast. This is a mini-series that we've added as part of the main Roll to Save lineup. We hope you enjoyed it, and that you will join us for our next episode. Thanks again to Jason for running the game, and of course to Steve for voicing McTavish, and Matt for voicing Bob. If you want to hear more from Matt, you can find him on the Good Friends of Jackson Elias podcast. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can do so on Twitter at SavePodcast, or you can email us at roll.to.save.pod@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook by searching for Roll to Save. We're a monthly podcast about the history of old school RPGs. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. Until then, remember, guns kill, but so does the truth.